What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative. I'm your host, Brett McGrath. This is the collector conversation that happens every damn Friday on the Stacking Slabs podcast main feed. And you know what? It's playoff time, so it's time to talk basketball cards. That's why I got my man Chris and Josh from the Card Ladder team both on the pod. You're mad that you didn't get the crossover last week? That's okay. Both of them are coming on. We're having a focused conversation where we go into all things basketball cards. I think you're going to like this one. If you like what I'm doing over here, not only tell a damn friend, sign up for that Patreon group. I am putting in work. If you want exclusive content, if you want to connect with community of collectors around really nerdy, sicko type topics, that's what we're doing over there. Would love to have you. It is in the show notes. And while you're at it, we've got Card Ladder on the damn show. Go sign up for Card Ladder. Good people, great product. Without further ado, let's kick it over to the conversation. All right, we're just going to get into this. We have a lot of ground to cover. We are talking about basketball and basketball cards. We're going to try to get this in under an hour because we've got places to be. But I'm here with Chris and Josh, dual pod. This is like the extension of the crossover for any of you who were sad you missed it last week. And we're going to talk about the playoffs and basketball cards. But without further ado, Chris, Josh, welcome back. I meant to look before, but I can't remember the last time we've done this with both of you on here. So welcome.
Thanks for having us back.
Thanks, Brett. We're ready.
Okay. So the first topic is, I know we all of us, I'm a Halliburton guy. Chris, you collect Jokic and you collect Luka. Josh, you collect LeBron, obviously. So let's just start here. Outside of the following players we collect, because we can be super biased on those players and those topics, which we are always, what do you think maybe are the most compelling storylines as we are now on the other side headed towards the playoffs? And we'll start. Chris, I know you've got a heavy answer. Maybe we'll let you sit for a second and we'll start with Josh.
Yeah, I have like four written down and I kind of want to just like read them all and then we'll just let it sit for a second. My first one is Joel Embiid coming back like at the very last minute. Can he stay healthy? Can the Sixers get out of the play-in? Will they play the Knicks? I find that fascinating because I think a lot of people are going to favor the Sixers. Embiid was like an MVP front runner for a little bit there and he's coming back at the very end. It's going to be fascinating. My most interesting one, and this is not because I'm on this show, Brett, but I'm fascinated to watch this Pacers series. I think that they're better than the Bucks. I think the Bucks have been ass since they hired Doc Rivers. They're 20-21. Giannis just got injured, which traditionally is about a 3 to 4 week injury. He's going to be rushing back. I think the Pacers are going to roll them. So that's going to be an interesting storyline. Giannis going out in the first round 2 years in a row. Fascinating stuff. My other one is OKC. This is the only thing Bill got right the whole year. They're the number one seed in the West. What an amazing story. They don't even have a true center. Their team is very small, but they're extremely young. They've been healthy all season. Can they make a run in the playoffs with no experience? I wrote the next line, Doc Rivers is ass. That's all I wrote. I don't know why people keep hiring this guy. I don't understand it. They get better the second he leaves. The team was good before they hired him. I don't understand. And then just the West in general. The West is absolutely loaded. I think we're going to have some underdogs in the higher seeds. Like, I'm looking at OKC might even be underdogs if they go up against the Warriors. I don't think they really will be, but people like in the media will say they are. The Wolves are going to have a tough matchup with the Suns. The first round is going to be fascinating. All eight teams are going to be really good in the West. I feel like the West is pretty open. That's all I got.
I want to react really quick before I kick it over to Chris. The one thing that terrifies me is the fact that the Pacers won 4 out of 5 against the Bucks this year, and then now Doc Rivers is the coach, and then it is such the trendy pick to say the Pacers are going to beat the Bucks. That's what scares the hell out of me. I'm expecting Dame time, like game one, just setting the tone if Giannis can't play. But the other thing is the I don't know, in the East, it outside of like, and the play-ins haven't happened as we're recording this, But outside of like Boston, which Boston might get Miami, which is compelling in and of itself, but it just yeah. seems like the seeding doesn't even matter. It's just like, here are a bunch of teams, almost anyone can win. So it is a wild card. And the West is absolutely loaded. The fact that like we're talking about the Lakers and the Warriors down in the play, it's just crazy. But Chris, anything Josh said that inspired you? I know you've got a lot on your mind.
Yeah, I'm going to just piggyback on what you just said, which is, so the Bucks, for example, are the 3 seed and the Pacers are the 6 seed, but they're only separated by 2 games. So the Bucks won 49, the Pacers won 47. So the gap isn't nearly as big as like the seeding suggests that it would be. And if you want something to temper your Pacers' expectations, I also obviously am picking the Pacers to win that series. I love the Pacers. I think the Pacers are the dark horse of the East. But if you want something to temper your Pacer expectations, I don't think they have played Milwaukee with their new-look Siakam lineup.
Have not.
So the thing that was, like, torturing Milwaukee was the speed and the athleticism of the small-ball Pacers run the ball down your throat system, and Siakam has changed that calculus a little bit, so there's that.
Yeah, I hate the fact that you're both on Team Pacers. Much better to be a kind of just show up, but I feel like when you show up on the national stage, and I guess damn you to the play-in tournament, because that kind of was the Pacers coming out party, but we'll see. I think this is the most excited I've been, maybe because my team is involved, but it just seems like it's a wild card. Chris, was there anything else specifically you wanted to dive into?
Yep. So I'm just going to fill in the cracks because I agree with all 4 points that Josh made. And I'll just like kind of rapid fire some quick storylines I think that matter specifically to like player collectors in the hobby. Giannis does have a chance to get his second title and his second finals MVP, which would be huge for his legacy. Curry has a chance for a 5th title and a second finals MVP. Kevin Durant has a chance for a 3rd title and a 3rd finals MVP. Kawhi Leonard has a chance for a 3rd title and a 3rd finals MVP. So there's like, outside of our PC guys, there's your 4 legacy guys who can climb meaningful steps in the pantheon and add to already all-time great resumes in these playoffs that are happening over the next few months. So those are really exciting storylines to me. And then you've got your first timers, Embiid, like Josh said, could get his first title. Tatum could get his first title. Butler could get his first title. I think those are the guys who like they're vets and they're knocking at the door. And then your final category is your breakout guy, your guy who arrives on the scene in a meaningful conference finals run, which is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which is Anthony Edwards, Zion, Jalen Brunson, Halliburton, who's taken so much slander lately that it just makes no sense to me. And then Paolo Banchero and Donovan Mitchell. So so many storylines can develop from these playoffs.
Okay, so Josh, I want to toss it to you on the card front because you are obviously a premium LeBron collector. There's nobody in this playoffs that has the legacy of LeBron and has done more than LeBron. And when you look at his cards, obviously, like, LeBron is the most steady ship there is, right? It's like people who don't even collect basketball cards who want to maybe like dip their toe into basketball cards are like, let me pick up a LeBron card or two. His legacy matters. His cards matter. I'm curious, based on you being a LeBron collector, looking at the field of everybody else, whose cards do you think could obviously maybe not get to that next level or next category of a LeBron, but who, if they were to win kind of an NBA finals, do you think would help bolster their overall cards interest and market the most
to gain? And from the way that you phrase it that way, and jumping off the way Chris was talking about it, I would say Giannis, just because of like where he's already at, getting the second ring. He would have to overcome a lot this year with the injury and the bad coaching they've had and the sort of like bad finish they've had of the season. So I think Giannis would have a ton to gain there. I wrote down a bunch of other names that just like we've seen their cards drop a lot. And I think they have a really good chance to kind of reverse course. And then the other way, I think we've seen some of the younger guys jump up a bunch and they could go down just based on expectations. But I think of for your question there, I'd say Giannis.
Who are some of the, I guess, same question, but to you, Chris, and then Josh, I want to hear what some of those other guys are.
Let me just put my answer on hold because I would really like to hear the list that he came up with as well. I don't have a list for that, so I think that's gonna we can rip off of that.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I just went to Card Ladder. Shameless plug. I went to Card Ladder, went to the players page, filtered basketball. Filtered 100 cards or more so that we make sure we get a good sample size. And I sorted by a 1 year change up and down. And these are the guys that have gone down the most that I think are in the playoffs that I think have a chance to reverse course. Number one, Paolo Banchero is down 61% in the last year. And that is actually, I'm glad Chris mentioned at the very end, because he would be like my number one guy that I think could really make some noise. I think if they get past the Cavs, people will really like those guys haven't been on TV all year. And if people start to see Banchero, I think he could be one. Zion is down 57% in the last year. If he were to somehow maybe get into the tournament, get a nice run on the first round, he'd probably lose in the first round. But if he can make some noise, I think it gives a lot of confidence to him being semi-healthy this year, making a bit of a comeback. Kevin Durant's down 57% in the last year. A lot of that is he just got way too high. Like it didn't make any sense, his value, but he could make a run. And then Chris won't say this, so I will for him. Luka is down 35% in the last year. And in the last year, all he's done is get another first team All-NBA. I think he's like five in a row. The team has been incredible since the trade. They're moving up into the five seed. I think that they'll probably be favored over the Clippers given the Kawhi situation. And there's just like, it wasn't that people are tired of Luka. It's just that like, that's just what happens in cards. Like you get 3 or 4 years of a run up and then people just kind of move on to the Wimbys and whatever. But if Luka makes a run, I think he'll come back into the front of people's minds of like, oh yeah, this guy's like probably the best player in the NBA, if not second. So Luka, and then I wrote down LeBron because he's down 40% in the last year, but that, you know, that's, we've talked enough about that. And then do you want me to do the loss or you want to stop there?
I'm actually curious, like something, a player you brought up, I'm interested in talking about and just comparing him with another player you brought up, but Zion Williamson. I mean, you rewind the tape. It was all about Zion all the time. And then there was a bunch of negative. Now Zion's on a really good team. But if you look at the team, right, you've got McCollum, Ingram, like this team, they played the Pacers in like a back-to-back. So I got to see him twice in a row. Pacers beat them once, and then they got smoked when they went to New Orleans. Herb Jones, this team is like super nice. Like they're very well rounded. They're fun. Maybe not well rounded is a good word because you've got point Zion going on, but Zion like he's like a star in that mix. But it's almost like the supporting cast is like if they weren't there, the Pels would just suck. So it's like weird in Zion's case where it's like, man, this guy is the guy when we think of the Pelicans that we talk about and has such a significant place in our hobby based on his cards. But the team around him is so good where, you know, if I look at the Mavs, yes, the Mavs have Kyrie, but like Luka Doncic is, you can't even refute. He's one of the best players in the league. People could argue him as the best player in the league. And so I think of value in cards in that setting. And it's just like, man, Luka is on this trajectory because he's out there doing it. Mm-hmm. And where I look at Zion, it's like, man, he's got such a supporting cast. And it's just like this, I wanted to throw that out there and just kind of try to get a sense of how you feel regarding like player situation, superstardom versus like just being a member of a really good team and like card values and just like throw that nuclear bomb out and just see how you all respond to it.
The old bus driver, bus rider, as Charles Barkley likes to put it. In cards, collectors and investors definitely want to see you be the top guy, and for good reason. Like you're dominating as the number one guy, because we've seen that traditionally with MJ and LeBron and stuff. So Zion, to your point, probably isn't that. And I think the expectation of what he is probably leveled out to where it should be. It was way too hot coming out, and it's overcorrected way too much. He's probably somewhere in the middle. So I think he's a great player. He's proven a lot this year, and I'm excited to see what they can do.
Chris.
Yeah, I agree. I do think he's in a fortunate position where in a world in which the Pelicans win the championship, which like there is like a weird path, right? Because what if they fall to the 8 seed and they get Oklahoma?
They're good.
And then like what if the Clippers beat the Mavericks, but then Kawhi gets injured in the second round? And then like what if they get a good matchup in the conference finals? Like there's a weird path in that world. I think Zion
weird
will
means impossible.
If that world happens, Zion probably is finals MVP. I think like the gap between him and CJ McCollum and Brandon Ingram and the rest of that team, it's not as big as the normal gap is probably between the best player and the rest. But I think he would still be recognized as the finals MVP. So like he still is the face of that team and probably the best player on that team. So there's at least that going for him. But I like to see in my hobby, in my hobbying, I like 99th percentile guys. And so there's a league of – we have a league of 450 players. So there's 4.5 guys who are in the 99th percentile. All right? I'll give you 4, and then I'll give you a half. And then, you know, maybe a few guys can fight for that half guy spot. Zion is not fighting for that spot. So that's where I kind of take a back seat to being in – to my interest in a Zion – narrative takes a backseat.
So I got to ask you about Luka, because you've been on the Luka path from the beginning and have seen his cards do all sorts of things. You've seen just him continue to elevate his play. You've seen the surrounding pieces change. You've seen the coaches change. This season feels a little different based on the way the season ends. There is momentum in Dallas, and Luka is playing. Maybe you're the stat guy. You probably can refute it or support it. But like for me, he's playing like just the best all around basketball, I think, consistently he's ever played. As you're a fan and a collector going in and watching these playoffs and holding Luka cards as a collector, like, are you like, how do you feel? Are you like really, really nervous? Are you really, really excited? Like, share some of those emotions as a Luka collector going into these playoffs.
Very excited, but I'm not overly optimistic. I think Luka is still or two away from being his best version of himself. I think he's definitely had his best season to date, and I think you're right. Like, they closed with a lot of momentum, but they also have two of their 5 starters join the team 2 months ago, and I don't believe in the coach, and I still think there's areas of improvement for Luka that he eventually will get to, but he's just not quite there yet. So, you know, I think this is the first time he's ever been in serious discussion as an MVP by the end of the season. So that's a meaningful improvement. He won the scoring title. That's great. But I still think that there's a level or two yet to go for him before my expectation going into the playoffs for him is like finals or bust.
Josh, I want to hear kind of how you feel about the potential first round LeBron matchup. Like, how do you think it's going to shake out? One, because you collect LeBron. And then I'm just curious how you feel about the Suns as well.
Well, it's looking like they'll probably play the Nuggets, which is bad for them. Nuggets are clearly the better team. I've seen some people being like, oh, they should lose to the Pelicans so they can get OKC, but I don't know that you want to get into a one-and-done situation with Steph Curry. They just lost to them at home recently. I know Davis didn't play, but, you know, the Warriors can get hot, so I don't know that I would mess around with that. So they're probably going to play the Nuggets, which is going to be really tough. The Suns, I have my expectations are zero. Like, I basically checked out on them a few weeks ago. I just don't see it with them. Like, they're too up and down. They don't have any consistency. Their offense in the fourth quarter is basically like the worst in NBA history. So, like, they played well yesterday, but, you know, I've seen where they'll win 3 in a row and and Reddit is like, oh yeah, the Suns are going to the championship, and then they'll lose to the Spurs without Wemby. So it's like, I just don't trust them over a 2 month stretch. So my expectations for both teams are pretty low.
So now I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to do the same for Chris, and then we'll move on to the next topic. What are your expectations for Dallas? And then also, I know Chris collects Jokic. So what are your expectations for the Nuggets? And that's, I want to hear it from you, Josh. And then Chris, give you some time. I'm going to ask the same about the Suns and the Lakers.
You're asking me about the Nuggets and the Mavs?
How do you feel like they're
going to? I haven't watched those teams as much. I would assume the Nuggets are going to be very good. They have the same teams last year. I would assume they're going to do very well. Mavs, I've seen them a bit, and I think they're getting hot at the right time. That Gafford trade was huge. So I expect them to beat the Clippers. And then they get OKC, which is a good favorable matchup. I texted this to Chris. It's like, man, the Mavs got a great path. Like, he was talking about the Pelicans path. The Mavs have that path, but a lot more realistic. So they are probably headed towards like the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals, which is like the best case scenario for them. So both of those teams, I would probably agree with Chris. Like, I wouldn't have, like, if I were him, I wouldn't go into this thinking like the Mavs are going to win the championship, but the Nuggets are probably finals or bust given that they just won.
Chris, Lakers, Suns, any thoughts there?
Yeah. The teams that have the best records since the All-Star break include the Warriors and the Lakers. They're both in the top five, pretty sure. And that's a big sample. It's like a 30-ish game sample. So that's meaningful. And I just think that the Lakers went to the Western Conference Finals last year as a low seed. And I, as a side note, I heard on a podcast somewhere over the last few weeks that LeBron is 7-0 in single elimination NBA games because of his play-in and the in-season tournament stuff. So I'm like, I'm interested to see if that goes to 8-0 in the play-in. And the Lakers just there's not like a home run finals team argument for that team, but there is the LeBron and Anthony Davis and a bunch of good role players argument for that team that like keeps them as a team that if you're a fan of other teams, you'd like for them to go out as soon as possible. And then for the Suns, I actually think my opinion on the Suns is different than Josh's, but he knows them a lot better than I do, so I would trust his opinion way over mine. But I have the Suns as probably outside of the two teams I'm rooting for. They are the scariest team to me in the West, and I think they have a good first-round matchup that they're going to dominate against the Wolves. And at the end of the day, they have Kevin Durant, and they have Devin Booker. And remember, Devin Booker was on fire in the playoffs last year for two rounds in a row. He was going off. And nobody will mention this when they tell the history of the NBA playoffs, but like the Suns were winning by 10 in game five of a 2-2 series against the Nuggets. They were up, and then Chris Paul got hurt. And that changed the complexion of that series quite a bit. So they don't have Chris Paul anymore, which I think hurts them a lot more than most people would be willing to admit. But I also think that the Suns, I like their role players. Grayson Allen just had the sixth greatest three-point shooting season of all time of players who attempt at least 400 three-point attempts in a season. He won the three-point shooting crown. I like Nurkic. His on-off stats are really good. I like that team. I think they're a real threat. I think the Suns are.
We'll get back to maybe the way too early prediction of who we all think is going to win this, but let's talk about cards a little bit. Josh, I've been following your mail days and your page, and you have been just on this flurry of picking up LeBron exquisite pieces, which has been fun to watch. I'm curious, are you done yet? Or what has been your mentality and strategy as you've been? Is there any science behind this? Or are you just like shaking trees and finding cards that you want?
I've just been kind of grabbing all of like the top exquisites that I can get my hands on. They're mostly non-rookies. There was one rookie in there, but I think at this point I'm getting close to gathering up everything and trading it all for like one card. So I'm working on that.
You're probably not, which I wouldn't advise doing, disclosing what that card is.
Absolutely
but has
not.
Been, but has this been the plan all along?
No. It's just like I have too many cards. Like it's just, you know, I pick up like six and it's like, why do I have, as you pick up new ones, like I'm sure both of you guys go through this, but like it's great in the moment. But then as you get like better ones subsequently, you kind of look back at like 6 months ago and you're like, why do I have this one still? I'd love to trade these bottom 20 for something really, really nice and just keep leveling up. But then sometimes I think, man, what if I just level up to the max and just trade it all? It's probably not very realistic, but it's just a funny topic.
So I was going through this actually yesterday where I'm not going to disclose any of the information of what was available, but like this slew of cards that I'm very interested in became available. And, you know, they're auction style. So I had some time, but I just went over to my collection and I look, and there's a lot of cards there. Some obviously I care way more about than others. And I like went through the consolidation process, like the Judgment Day, and literally like I had cards in my hand that I literally have had that are cards that I never regretted buying, but have had for like 4 years. And I just looked at these cards and I was like, you know what? I love you, but it's time to move on. And I think that's just such a interesting phase we go through where when we have these cards, like we want to say that they're like forever cards in our collection, but everything evolves and we go through these motions where then we just always want bigger or better. So I'm like, are you both like always thinking bigger and better? Are you never like content with your collection? Like maybe Chris, starting with you, like what is your kind of philosophy with how you approach getting something new, enjoying what you have? What's the balance?
Yeah, this is the topic of curation.
Oh Lordy.
Right? This is I think like in the best case scenario of what people mean when they say curate, what they mean is how do I compose my collection? And there are some people who want their collection to tell a story about something, which is a really cool way to build a collection. And that's not my lane. There are some people who want to curate a collection based on like sets, you know, like, and I've tried that, and that's not my lane. I wish I was a set collector. It looks like fun, but that's not really me either. My theory of curation, which pisses off some of the curators, is I want to have the very best possible cards. And the logic of having the very best means oftentimes the nonstop consolidation until you are into that one card. That is the end game of a curation approach that wants to have the very best cards.
So I'm
always like snowballing. I would call it the snowball approach. I'm always
so snowballing. I saw you just casually drop in your story this week, and I commented on it. But you just picked up a Black Shimmer Jokic 1/1. So that like how obviously it's a Prism product, 1/1, not the black, but Black Shimmer. Like I can't recall what year it was, but like, what was it about? How did that card present itself to you? And then how did you decide that was a card that was in the best category for you?
No, it's a funny story. So this card showed up on eBay a month ago, maybe a few weeks ago, for 25K OBO, which was an entirely unrealistic price. And I think it also may have been making the rounds on some of the Facebook groups too at a similar price.
Mm.
And some of the other Jokic collectors I know were discussing it. And I was just like, yes, I'm not really, I don't know any Black Shimmers. And this is not a card that's calling out to me or that I'm going to get aggressive for. And then as this doesn't happen often, but like when it does happen, I'm always amused. all of a sudden it's 20K OBO. And then it's 15K OBO. And then it's 10K OBO. And then it's 8K OBO. And then it's 6K OBO. And I'm at that point, when it got down to like 6K or best offer on eBay, I said, wait, let me just like look at some, this is starting to feel in a reasonable range. And I started looking at some other prices. I said, all right, let me offer 4K. And we settled there. So the card sunk like a stone until I reached my hand in the water. And
80% off. What a deal.
Yeah. That's the story behind that. And you know what? There is some, like, Shirley Mueller talks about this in her book on collecting. There is something that satisfies certain collectors' brains about getting an item for a good price. There's something satisfying about that that can let you rest easy with a card, and it will make you feel different. It will make me feel differently about a card than if I overpaid for it. There are some cards that I will overpay for because I want it that much. There's other ones that I'll buy if I feel like I'm getting a good deal.
How long of a time frame was this? Like,
dude, it was just every day. Dropping wow. Every day.
That's like, get your popcorn out. So what was the point? It was like when it went under 10K where you're like, all right, now you've got my attention. Is that where
at that at? Around that point was when I started intentionally going to eBay multiple times a day to see if it had dropped again yet.
I'm curious for you because I feel like LeBron cards have to be like a culprit of this where somebody has a LeBron card and they like mark it up, you know, 50 to 100%. And then go around the circles and, you know, put it on all the marketplaces, all the Facebook groups and all the stories. If that is a card that you want, when you see that LeBron card being shopped around so aggressively, like, does it make you have reservations on really wanting that or not? Or how does it make you feel?
Yeah, for sure. I really prefer the card to show up at auction when I didn't know that it was even available. It's just like, it's here. I've got this one shot at it. I've got an equal chance. You know, I don't have to go back and forth and stuff. And I haven't seen it, as you say, like moved around all these different marketplaces. It does make me feel worse about the card when I see that. Chris's scenario is, I enjoy that one as well, because you could just like tell immediately the person who has it has zero interest in owning it long-term. And they're just like, you know what? This is my price. If not, I'll just hold it. And then they drop it. It's like, okay, you don't actually mean that. And then desperation sets in. I'm okay with that scenario. I guess, yeah, I'm just not okay with the like months and months of it. There's one I've been watching on eBay, and they do this, the absolute worst, low of the low, starting price auction at like 5x the comp. You know what I'm talking about? Where they do the auction, yeah. The starting price is just way too high. And they let it run for 7 days, and then they drop it by $500. They run 7 days, they drop it by $500. Those ones, I'm just like, ugh, no thanks.
Yeah, that's certainly the worst. One of the things that I'm curious to get, I haven't spoken to either of you about this, but I have been using Card Ladder to dig into this more than anything else. And when I dig into this, I feel like it's the more enlightened I feel. And it's what Nick has been talking about with no recent comps. And how like one of the most important things when we're talking about values that we should really look at is like, when is the last time or time in between a card coming to market? And it just is like, it's like undeniable. Like when you see a card that hasn't showed up in like 3 years or so that has like, you know, the right era, the right player, the right scarcity, the right grade, all these things that we value the most when we're talking about it, it just seems like those are the cards that are continuing to elevate in price. How do you feel? Like, what is your perspective as, you know, the builders of Card Ladder and people who are looking at the data probably more than most around like that nugget, like how many times a card sells and its impact on its value? Either one can jump in.
You got to say a name, dude.
Oh, Chris, sorry. I'm the facilitator. I forgot.
Let me pass this one to Josh, because I don't really think I have a good answer ready yet.
I think it's probably the number one thing that we look for in terms of interest in a card. And it's also the thing that, like, when I own a card, Chris and I each own a card, my LeBron exquisite, LeBron's red, or Chris's red PMG Jordan, where those cards come to auction just way more than we'd like to see. And it honestly does like piss me off every time one of them hits auction and I start to like question, why are you selling this so much? And I shouldn't, right? It's people have their own reasons. They've got their lives and their stories and they have their reasons. They've got to pay their bills, whatever. It's not my business. But when the card sells frequently, it really does like reduce your interest in owning it long term. So that's definitely the thing that I pay attention to the most. The cards that I just keep seeing sell, those are the ones I just more and more frequently don't want to own. And when like a Barry Sanders PMG Gem Master hits, it's definitely the first time that's hit auction because it's a 1-of-1 and we haven't seen it. So those are the cards you want to be in because you don't have to worry as much about like the supply and demand issues. And whether you could say whatever you want, but like if a card sells every month, the price is going to go down. That's just how it goes because there's just more and more supply. People feel like I'll just wait next month. There's no point in me, you know, killing myself to get this one. I'll just get the next one.
Chris?
Yeah. Okay. So that was a great set of points because it made me think about a few different things. The one thing that I think about right away is that when there are high net worth individuals in particular who have multiple income streams, including passive income streams, who got involved with cards, especially at the peak, and now are staring at real big paper losses, 40%, 60%, 80%, they are able to utilize those losses to offset other income streams for tax purposes. And that kind of creates an environment where there's a free roll, so to speak, with high-end card purchases. So if I buy a high-end card for $100,000 and it's worth $20,000 now, and I can sell it right now and have an $80,000 offset against my other passive income streams, it becomes a wash. And so I think that's adding pressure to the velocity of sales that we see from a certain type of buyer. Now, looking at the volume of sales of especially high-end cards that are coming to market with the leading auction houses, that volume has gone way down. So I think a lot of those sales already took place and the losses were already harvested. But it's a reality of the dynamic of the market cycle of the last few years that there did or still does exist an incentive to lock in a loss for tax purposes in certain situations. So I think that was adding pressure to sales velocity. And then Josh is completely right that it's not our business when people buy and sell or hold things. But we are entitled to have an opinion about how it impacts the macro. And I'll give an example. I was thinking about this analogy this weekend. The example would be, let's say I own a house on a block. And I own a house on a block, right? And suddenly there are two new homeowners on my block and they buy their house at market value. And then 3 months later, they're both trying to sell their house and they sell the house for under market value. And then BlackRock comes in and buys one of the houses on my street. And then they decide they want to get out of it a few months later. And then one of the new owners of those two houses that just sold comes in and they buy it. And then a few months later, they want to get out of it. That's not good for the property values on my street. And as a person who owns a house on that street, I'm entitled to be a little grumpy about that. And I think that's a context that can help people understand why people get grumpy when they are a shared owner of a card, of a high-profile card that sells a lot, that they just feel like, why'd you buy the card in the first place if you were just going to turn around and sell it and make the card feel more available than we'd like it to be?
So the thing that made you grumpy is that none of those people actually wanted to own the home. BlackRock doesn't care, for sure. Other people are probably looking to flip. So that's what makes us more grumpy is like as collectors, we have to kind of sit back and like watch people who never actually want to own it. It's one thing if someone worked really hard to get into the card, they've wanted to own it, and then something comes up, right? We understand that situation. The other situation is like you just all along have just come through with the intention of plowing through and flipping it and creating that double comp. You're creating double supply when you make a move like that. And that's the part where it's like, we are entitled to be a little bit peeved.
I think there certainly, I don't know, the data probably tells the story, but it feels like there was a stretch not too long ago where it seemed like every weekly auction, there was the same, like, you know, five cards being sold over and over again. And I feel like that's improved a little bit. But I'm curious, just, I know you all have been back into cards kind of pre-pandemic. There was years before, and I've always viewed you guys, I know you collect a lot of different stuff, but just as basketball collectors. And I would love to know kind of your viewpoint on the basketball card segment, and maybe like one big thing that you've thought about just in terms of the evolution. Like, has basketball cards, the way we've collected them, just themes that incorporate itself within basketball cards, has there been anything kind of significant in that time you've been back into cards until now that you think is important enough to call out? Maybe Chris, we'll start with you.
All right. I'm going to go in a kind of a weird direction on this question. It's going to be like a niche answer that isn't probably going to resonate very well with people, but I think it's like, it's just honest to what I think about a lot lately in the context of basketball cards. Basketball cards, one of the things I noticed about that market now more than ever is the pressure that the flood of new releases is constantly placing on the demand for basketball cards in general. So to give an example, like Flawless recently came out, and that means, you know, to take a player who I PC, Luka, you know, there's a Luka and Kyrie Flawless dual logo man in that product, which is coveted right now, I think, by Mavs collectors who are feeling optimistic and they like the Kyrie Luka thing, how it's worked out and stuff. And that introduces a new, very valuable card into the pool of supply. And have we added the equivalent amount of demand to absorb that supply? And the answer, when you look in the totality of the new offerings that come out of here, the answer is no way. No way. So for every year that comes, you know, that passes, you've got how many Luka Logomans and Flawless, and then, you know, how many Logoman autographs from Immaculate, and then a Prism Black and a Prism Black Shimmer, and, you know, a Prism Nebula. You know, you get another one of those every year. You get another Prism Gold, you know, or whatever your favorite product is. And that is that's just this constant assault on the market for basketball cards. And like, it was easy to overlook this when the rate of increase of market participants was multiplying month over month for a period of time. And it was even easy over to come this, like, from 2016 to 17 to 18 to 19, because there was relatively fewer products and there was an organic growth of new people coming into the hobby during that time period. And then you just kind of like crammed like 10 years of growth into a 1 year period during the pandemic, or a few year period during the pandemic. And the manufacturers responded to that amount of growth. And now, you know, we can look at the sales volume figures on the industry tab on Card Ladder, and we can take heart at that the monthly sales volume figure is pretty steady, like a steady 200-225 million range for the last 2 years. But it can't be steady when there's 30 new products coming out every year. It can't, it has to, in order for prices just to stabilize, that the volume has to go up in proportion to how the supply goes up. So even though we've seen volume stabilize over the last few years, that is happening in an environment of decreasing average prices. And a big part of that, I think, is the increase in supply. So that, I think, is part of my evolution of the basketball card market and the current state of the market. And then, which leads to the final point here, what is the collector's answer to this? How do we solve this? And how do we solve it in a way that we don't need to rely on the manufacturers to solve it for us? We don't need to rely on the influx of new people. How do we as collectors solve it? And I think we solve it through refining and enhancing and tightening up our collecting philosophies. And we narrow the scope of cards, especially for active players. We narrow the scope of cards that we're going to be buyers of. And then you say, well, what are some of those boundaries? Like, practically speaking, I'm like, the hobby has always had them. One of them is rookie cards. Focusing on rookie cards or rookie year cards has always set that boundary. So that's where I'm at as a basketball collector and a football collector, especially with like a big interest in active players, is like, how can I do my part to combat what I think is a bit of a problem? And I think that's how you do it, is that you just, if you set a boundary of the cards that are interested, that are of the highest interest to you as a collector, then they can't keep adding more supply to that.
I want to kick it over to Josh for his response or his reason, but I wanted to comment because as you were talking through that all the way through in my head, I just kept saying rookie cards, like when the solution is rookie cards. But then like I think about my own personal example and jumping back into basketball cards and selecting a player like Halliburton. Now, the most money I've spent on Halliburton cards have been his rookie cards. But the problem with his rookie cards is he's not wearing my team's jersey, right? It's this forgettable stint with the Kings. Well, he was great, but forgettable probably in his history of his career because hopefully he'll be a Pacer for the next 10 years. But that's all, like, there are those little components with every player that might cause, like, the energy for their rookie card set to be lower than someone like Luka, so I don't know. That's like one little dynamic at play just in that example that I don't know. I think I still buy his rookie cards because they're his rookie cards, and I'm coming to the same conclusions as you're describing here. Well, we need to shrink the sea at some level, but I think some of the things collectors are going to wrestle with are those dynamics with the players that they collect. There's always going to be some situation that puts it off course a little bit.
Yeah, I took this question way different than Chris, but I like the way he's taking it better than where I was taking it. This is a great topic, and it's because we get a lot of like, hey, you guys are telling me that and I'm glad you pointed this out because I was going to follow up with it, but you guys keep pointing out to me that the sales volume overall seems to be ticking upwards. Chris said it's steady. It's actually up a little bit, very slightly, but it is very consistent. So how is it that our indexes are down 10, 20, 30%, but the sales volume and the overall health and demand seems to be pretty steady. And it's very simply explained by what Chris pointed out. And the way to combat it is rookie cards. And the other way, the actual polar opposite of rookie cards, and this is one of the reasons we have this extra pressure, is there's been a massive increase in what we like to call gimmick cards. There's a huge pressure from the industry to create these like gimmicky, very, very expensive one-off cards. I'm looking at like the Brady Expos cards. I'm looking at the Wembanyama cards over and over. I'm looking at this like LeBron with his Bronny. There's like this pressure from these companies. Hey, we have to create a $1 million card. And the point that I think Chris has been hammering for a long time, and a lot of people are getting on this train now, is like you cannot manufacture and create these $1 million cards. They need to be born out of history through years of experience. I'm looking at like the Logo Man RPA autograph. That card cannot be manufactured out of thin air. It has to be created through the historical, how cards have been created for the last 15 years. Like it's born out of that. It's not that, hey, let's just create this $1 million triple Logo Man out of Flawless just because we feel like it, this LeBron triple. Well, what that does is it reduces the amount of money that LeBron collectors like myself are spending on his exquisite rookies. And they're putting this towards this ridiculous triple Logo Man that nobody asked for, that all of a sudden I'm supposed to think is a $5 million card. So there's like these two polar opposites fighting each other. I've got to create the next thing while us as collectors have to fight back and say, we want to stick to the historical norms of rookie cards and a player's quote unquote best cards that you cannot come in and manufacture over the top of me.
I wish we had more time because I feel like this is a whole nother episode along with like there, we almost got to the list. We almost got through it.
I had one rant that I,
yeah, but please throw out your rant, throw it out. We've got like a few minutes, but yeah. Let's go. Go for it.
I just couldn't live with myself if I didn't just get this out. And I only have 4 minutes. You asked about evolution. I thought the space has evolved with data, you know, toot my own horn here and Chris's horn, but like, I feel like not only us, but a lot of companies have really focused on data, and there's a big shift in focus on like understanding the history of the hobby and understanding which sets are the most important, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we've evolved in that world. When I first came in, it kind of was just all over the place. Like, oh, PMGs, maybe rubies, maybe this, maybe that. We've kind of narrowed in a bit, and that's good. I just think like I see the word evolution. I'm like, I feel like we've devolved since I joined. Like the focus when I joined was, and maybe this is just a, you know, outcome of like where I was in the space. Like I was more collector focused. Now I'm in the business. So maybe that's just why. But I feel like there's just way more hyper focus from leadership of these companies on like the gambling aspect of it and the influencing. There's just like so much focus on like, hey, we need to hire this influencer and partner with them. We need to figure out how we can get people to basically just like spend their money through the means of gambling repacks. These like, you know, breaking is obviously taking off a lot. So I'd like to see us get back towards more of a focus from leadership of these companies on collecting. I know that's easier said than done because a lot of these folks were hired like post COVID, and this is just kind of the reality that they know, and they don't have the history of collecting like we do. So that's like the devolution. Is that the right? I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but those two things are kind of fighting each other. And I like the way this topic has gone where we have these two like kind of conflicting fighting things, and we've felt it for a few years with like this collector versus investor thing. And it's going to be interesting to see where it heads.
So I want to like, I wrote down a note. I want to talk about this more, especially the gambling stuff along with 90s cards is another interesting topic. And also I wanted to talk about Wembanyama, but we didn't get to it. So I'm going to reach out to you guys. We're going to do like a round two here. Soon.
Simmons does part two. Come on.
Yeah. We're going to do a part two. I want to do it before I'm going to put you on the spot before actually not on the spot. Cause I gave you notes. You should have been thinking about this, Chris. Who's the East and West team in the finals, and who's your pick? And then Josh, you'll be next and we'll get out of here.
I'm just going to have fun with this because why not? I'm going to refrain from picking the West because I have way too many interests over there, but I'm picking the Pacers to win the East. I get it. I said it. I did it. I'm standing on business.
I hate you, Josh.
I'm rooting for the Suns, the Lakers, and after that, just absolute chaos. Like I want like all the lower seeds to win. I just want as a fan, I'm rooting for the Pacers. I'm rooting for the Knicks to go down, and I want the Bucks to lose. Like I'm just rooting for chaos. That's just the fun of it. And the Suns and the Lakers would be part of that chaos because they're lower seeds. So because of that, I'm picking the Nuggets over the Celtics. I'm going to just pick the opposite of what I want. Just chalk it up. And that way I have no responsibility over what happens.
I'm going to say it just because LeBron said it at the beginning of his last podcast. But get ready, world. Get ready to see TJ McConnell in action. And I'm sick that this guy's not being talked about as sixth man. He is the... Without TJ McConnell, we are lost. So get ready, world. Get ready to watch some TJ McConnell in that second unit.
Assists per 48. TJ McConnell, legend.
All right. Well, we're going to do part two. I'll get at you guys. I got to go, but we'll talk to you all soon. Everyone, thank you for listening. Always enjoy those conversations with Chris and Josh. I am more excited than I ever have been before. Going into this playoff season, a lot can happen. A lot is going on with basketball cards. Hopefully you picked up a nugget or two. Join that Patreon group. Would love to have you. Take care of yourself. Take care of others around you. Enjoy some damn basketball this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.